Brian Bushlack is back with Business Briefing on AM 770 KTTH.
And welcome back. We'll return to our interview with Patrick Stone in just a bit. But first, though, I want to remind you, we partnered with our friends at the accounting firm of Moss Adams, where they focus on the wine industry. Key piece being their 2013 Wine Industry Financial Benchmarking Survey. This is a very important survey, obviously, for the entire industry, and it's totally confidential. Like a blind tasting for Northwest wineries, you can visit mossadams.com/winesurvey. They've really streamlined the survey this year as well. Might take an hour or two tops, but well worth it. And if you fill this out, winery owners, CFOs, bookkeepers out there, you'll receive a free copy of the report for sharing your 2012 data. That's a $500 value. And by entering your winery's data, you'll not only receive a copy of the report when it's out in October, also be entered to win a full one-hour feature on your winery on Northwest Vine Time. So again, visit mossadams.com/winesurvey. Receive a free copy of the report and a chance to have your winery featured on Northwest Vine Time. Back to our interview now with Patrick Stone. I sat down with the president and CEO of Williston Financial Group and WFG National Title recently, and I got a market update from Pat entering the summer selling season. Let's talk Northwest real estate, Pat. Major markets. I realize we're entering what is the height of the summer selling season, but based on the interest rate discussion we had in our last segment, are we seeing any signs of a slowdown here midsummer?
Not yet, Brian. The interestingly enough, I think demand is such, and demand supply is such, that the resale market is actually still improving month over month. You know, historically, we look for a peak in resales late April, early May, and then a secondary peak in resales late August, aligned with the school year. This year, we've seen increases in resales in May and into June. It looks like June will be better than May, maybe 2% better. So we're not seeing a historical trend this year. Again, it's a supply-demand function. But there is no impact on resales because of any other market issues.
You know, it's interesting because I think conventional wisdom in the general public is that, you know, summer is the time in the Northwest. All summer long, the market's red hot. But people are also out enjoying the weather. And I know we've got a nice stretch of weather here the next couple of weeks. That does tend to distract people a little bit throughout July, at least, doesn't it?
Yeah, but almost anywhere you go, the sales cycle is more aligned to the school year than anything else. I mean, typically families are not going to move during the school year. So they will buy homes in anticipation of school ending, and they'll buy homes in anticipation of school starting. So that's, you know, over a 30-year cycle, if you averaged it all out, you would have a peak in late April, early May, and then a secondary peak at a lesser level in late August or early September. You do have summer issues. You have vacations. Early August is typically a really bad time for sales because everybody takes a vacation. But it's more aligned to the school year than anything else all over. Now, interestingly enough, the cycle of resales between the lows and highs are more accentuated the further north you go in the climate. You will see less change in the southern part of the United States than you do in the northern part, but still aligned with the school year.
Yeah, I got a buddy in Scottsdale, and he says it's a ghost town down there for the opposite reason we have. It's 110 degrees. Pat Stone, WFG National Title, joining us here on Business Briefing. Speaking of mortgages, we talked a little bit about this in our last segment, Pat. I want to kind of shift gears and talk more about the jumbo market. I'm seeing that there are some signs that this market is actually coming back. Fill us in.
Well, I think, yes, it is. Part of that is that people are becoming more confident. They're willing to spend money. As we talked earlier, we've seen some appreciation in assets. That helps. We've seen an improving economy. That helps. We have a lot of money in this country and a lot of people wanting to lend money. So you have seen the jumbo market come back. There actually is a privatized securitization market for jumbos. Nothing for nothing else, but for jumbos. So you are seeing some resuscitation, if you will, of the high-end market.
Now, the high-end market, too, with a full underwrite, you're talking about borrowers are pretty strong. Obviously, should be a fairly safe market to be in, right?
I would think.
We would hope. New home sales up 2.1%. Seasonally adjusted number now is just south of 500,000 per year. And I realize historically these numbers are still low.
far south of where they need to be. But it's good to see. What's a number we're looking for? What do we need to get to really make an impact, Pat?
Well, yeah, you know, there's a couple of components to that question, Brian. One, make an impact. You know, typically if you look at the investment component of the GDP formula, which is consumption plus investment plus the difference between exports less imports and government spending, the investment component is highly dependent on residential construction. It has been really missing in this recovery. And the way that it impacts the economy is really twofold. One, people buy a home. They buy a new home. There was a lot of labor and value created in building that new home. The other aspect is then they furnish it with, and typically if they buy a new home, they furnish it with new furniture, TVs, appliances, all those sorts of things. We have not had a significant increase in hiring or employment around residential construction yet. So I think we need to probably almost double that amount before that will have a profound impact on the economy. We have had an increase in some of the furniture and furniture and appliances and other aspects, and you see that in the stock prices of some of the companies and firms that provide those products. You see their stock prices going up. So I do believe we're going to have to almost double that amount. Now, one real quick thing here, Brian, that still is interesting to me, and that is that household formations are still significantly exceeding new construction, both single family and multifamily. And I don't see that changing for a few years, which is going to continue to result in higher prices.
You talked about that a little bit last time we got together a month or so ago. And let's kind of park on that for a bit because, you know, that was kind of where I was going with the question in the first place is how many homes do we have to build annually to not only catch up, but maybe even get in front of that wave you see coming in the next 3 to 5 years?
Oh, gosh, we probably need to more than double the amount of single family and continue at the current multifamily rate. So, if you have a million three in household formation, which is the best guess I've seen as to what that little average the rest of this decade, you know, for the next six plus years, we're going to average 1.3 million in household formation, plus you have at least 100,000 homes becoming obsolescent, right? So, I mean, you've got, you're going to have to pick it up pretty dramatically to even catch up with the demand.
It's going to be an interesting play to see how this plays out over the next few years. I don't think prices are going to go down anytime soon. I want to wrap this segment by talking energy, and it really kind of doesn't have anything to do with real estate other than the fact that it powers our homes. Approaching the 5th of July here, the unofficial start of summer across the Pacific Northwest. We have plenty of 80-degree days ahead. Pretty interesting to see, and you talked about this on past shows. We're paying less for power now. We're seeing electricity rates going down. Of course, natural gas rates have already come down. Something you told us was going to happen a while back, and now it's happening.
Yeah, this is interesting, and actually we're coming up on an inflection point where we'll actually be exporting more oil than we're importing for the first time in, 50, 60 years? I can't tell you, but it's been a long time. And that will happen this summer or this fall. So we have an abundance of fossil fuels and energy sources, natural gas. One of the breakdowns in the system probably for the average consumer is that oil prices do not necessarily translate directly to gas prices. And the reason for that is we've not built, I shouldn't say this because I don't know factually, but we haven't built very many distilleries in a long, long time. And the location of those distilleries are not necessarily closely aligned with the current population. So depending on how the distilleries are operating and what the demand is for gas and what kind of gas they're producing, what they're distilling, the prices of gas on demand will create a differential in gas prices versus petroleum product prices. So people get confused sometimes. They think the market's rigged. I think the market actually functions fairly efficiently, but distilleries and oil production are not necessarily directly aligned.
So you're telling me Obama does not control gas prices?
No, he does not.
Well, great insight, as always, from our friend Patrick Stone, the president and CEO of Williston Financial Group and WFG National Title. After the break, we'll call on Scott Phillips from True North Partners to help you with your business.